RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Pearl Harbor Day Val and
Beans. I don't want to laugh about Pearl Harbor Day. I'm laughing about what happened before Pearl Harbor Day.
I asked for a do-over. I had nothing ready. I just blanked. I forgot what day it was, who I was.
Yes, today is Pearl Harbor Day, and somebody, I didn't realize that it was the 7th, and somebody reminded me on Twitter, and I checked it out, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't even believe I didn't remember it was the 7th today. And then I heard on the radio earlier that they canceled like everything because all these vets are near 100, and they can't be in COVID places.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'm reflecting on it a little bit more. I always reflect on it because, of course, it was very important for me when I was young with my grandparents, and for everybody around here, obviously. But it was something that we always were made to reflect on because this was the day that our grandparents knew that their lives had changed forever. Just like when I came home from school the day that, you know, on 9/11,
yeah,
on September 11th, I remember my grandfather, he was still alive for two more years. He died in 2003. And when I had gotten home that day, he was watching the news and he was just, he was visibly shaken up because he knew what this meant for our generation. And now I think about it today, here we are 20 years after 9/11, and I'm saying I have, In private conversation, I have ceased to acknowledge the 2020 election as just that. It's an act of war. The 2020 election was an act of war. It's all there, so similar.
There's no better way to explain it. That's perfect.
Yeah. It feels there's a different kind of weight today because we just lived through yet another one.
Yeah. Wow. Well, today, Frank, I kind of scheduled something and did it because it was an availability thing. But we have an interview today on the show that really is going to shock everybody. I interviewed somebody. I don't know if a lot of people have heard of him, Dr. Ravi Singh. He is a PhD and he's a brilliant guy who created. He was one of the first people to run for office in the United States using the internet. And he developed software that would help candidates to fundraise, spin up a website, do all the things that they wanted to do. But he developed it back in the day, you know, one of the first people before it was actually popular. And he did really well with it. It was implemented around the world. Actually, at the time back then, Microsoft jumped on board with him and they were working with him as well. This was before Microsoft was like the evil, you know, thing we know it is today. And very long story short, this gentleman was entrapped into federal criminal charges by the FBI under the Obama administration. And I am personally making the leap to say that it was because his software helped a lot of conservative candidates to run for office. And I met
can't have that.
Nope, can't have that. And you know, it's funny because I asked him about NGP Van and he said that they were one of their biggest competitors at the time when, you know, they were in their heyday. And this was 7 years ago. And his story is absolutely incredible. And I just wanted to interview him because at this point he was sentenced just recently to 1 year and 1 day in federal prison for things that he didn't do. And it's all too common nowadays to hear about this. And his only hope right now to get out of that nonsense and to have to, you know, to be able to continue his life with his beautiful wife, who I met, is clemency from the president. And hopefully we can bring some attention to his story and get it out there and help him out because he's really just a really great person.
Well, I can't wait to hear this interview. I was surprised to hear this morning when you said, "Hey, well, we only have to record 10 minutes of the show." I said, "Really?"
Yeah.
So this will be fun.
Yeah. So you get to write a little bit and listen and write and listen, and you might want to have him on your show too. I'm not sure, but I think everybody's going to benefit from this interview with Dr. Singh. He's campaign guru. He's done a lot of amazing stuff. He actually has a doctorate in social media. Which he got in 10 short months while he was going through this nonsense. He got his doctorate in 10 months. He's a brilliant guy. So without further ado, Dr. Singh, thank you for joining me today. I want to make sure that we get your story out to as many people as possible.
Oh, thank you, Tracy, for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity.
So you've kind of floated under the radar with this. And when I got a chance to speak with you for the brief time that we spoke in Florida, I was blown away. So what I want to do is go through in as much detail as possible without overwhelming folks. First of all, your background, who you are. You're not just some person. You're an amazingly brilliant person. You're brilliant. And what you've done. So go ahead.
I appreciate it. I think personal background, you know, I think that it was awesome meeting you, because I'm excited to share my story with your audience, because I've been literally locking this up for 7 years. And I think everyone's going to be shocked when they hear what has happened to me in the last 7 years. You know, first of all, a lot of people can't see me, so I'm a red turban wearing Republican. I think I can start off by describing everyone by that description. And I was born and raised in the United States. Mom and dad, you know, came here to pursue the American dream as immigrants from India. My dad from Burma, and my father, you know, raised us with American values, but told us that we are Sikh Americans. And many people might not know about Sikhism because we are often mistaken as Muslims. But Sikhs are, you know, originate from India, monotheistic belief. And one of the requirements for us is to wear this turban and have a long beard, similar to the stories of Samson in the Bible about keeping strength and being committed. And so I grew up with those kind of beliefs. And so my parents sent me to military academy in the United States, and Sikhs have a very strong military tradition. And Tracy, I did not get accepted, and my parents were devastated. But the reasons behind me not getting accepted was because I wore a turban. And the U.S. military had said that Sikh Americans could not wear the turban, along with the Jews and the yarmulke in the U.S. military. So President Ronald Reagan, one of my heroes, I think one of your heroes, right?
Yep.
And he signed legislation. My mom did not stop. We got legislation introduced by, I don't remember, the Congressman Denny Hastert, Congressman John Porter, and the legislation passed. And I'm dating myself, but in 1987, legislation was passed so I could graduate as full military honors as one of the first Sikh Americans in the United States with a turban.
Wow, that's something.
That was the beginning. And from there, it's, you know, it just keeps on going. And as I lived my life, I went to Valparaiso University, student body president of a great Lutheran college. I did my master's degree at Northwestern University in political science. My father was devastated because he wanted me to become a doctor. He would really be disappointed today because he says, I wanted you to become a medical doctor. Now you become a doctor of cat videos as a doctor of social media. And I ended up, you know, working in state government for lieutenant governor, the state treasurer. At the age of 25, Tracy, I ended up running for office because I believed there was no minority representation in the great party of Abraham Lincoln. And a lot of people asked me why I chose the Republican Party back then. And I said, well, you know, Republicans have elephants as a symbol, but donkeys have a jackass, and elephants come from India. So that was my logic.
Little did you know.
Yeah, little did I know, right? And so I fell in love, and the internet had just started booming, and I had a website in 1997 for my candidacy, which was one of the first.
Real quick, what state did you run in, and what state were you working in the lieutenant governorship? You know, where were you working in politics?
Illinois, of all states, right? Okay. At that time, Illinois was Republican, believe it or not. We had a Republican governor, Jim Edgar, and I lived in the suburbs, and it was strongly Republican. So if you won the primary, you usually won the general. And so I had really thought I wanted to be a public servant, a servant to the public. And so I actually stood at the same area where John F. Kennedy spoke in Aurora, Illinois, and I made my announcement. My campaign had a website back then, and I lost the campaign, but I didn't lose my passion for politics. And I fell in love with politics even more. But what I fell in love with, Tracy, was the power of the internet, because I was able to place very well and win the endorsements of four of the six mayors, primarily because of my tech savviness, the web presence, doing a town hall chat online through AOL back then. And I said, this is going to be this is going to change the world in politics, specifically political participation.
And you were right.
And it happened to be I was right. So I started a company, just like the idea of, like, Amazon was for books. I was going to create a mall for elections, and I decided to create Election Mall. And so the goal was to provide technology to the school board mom all the way up to the president of the United States, so that they or he or she could automatically benefit from technology, from like a website for online fundraising, emails, social media, etc.
So hold on one sec. So you got a doctorate in social media, you said. When did this happen? After Election Mall? Before?
It happens after Election Mall.
Okay.
And so I only have a master's degree at that time. And then guess what happens? One of the biggest technology companies in the world, everyone knows this name, everyone knows this company, Microsoft, puts in millions of dollars to support me and build this technology, because I am passionate about what I call e-democracy, increasing political participation via online for, political campaigns. And I go to the Libertarian Convention, I go to the Reform Convention, I go to the Constitutional Convention, I go to the Republican Conventions, I go to the Democratic Conventions, I went to the Green Conventions even. And I basically here was running around, and maybe some of your audience might remember me, and I was basically saying, if you need a website, I can build you one.
What year was this?
This was from the years from 2004 all the way until 2014.
Wow. Okay. So for 10 years, you're running around saying, hey, guys, you're not leveraging this capability. And, at the time, I don't think many people knew how evil Microsoft was. So there's that. But okay, so I'm interrupting you too much. Continue.
No. And so I was passionate, and Microsoft, in all fairness, was a great partner. They co-branded with us. Our software was called Campaign Powered by Microsoft. We were one of two products that Steve Ballmer had ever co-branded. And I was excited. I mean, the company was worth in the millions. We had over 7,000 political campaigns using our technology in the United States, all over the place.
What kind of tech was it that they were using? Like, what did it do?
So what I did was I said, let's make it easy. And there's something called software as a service, SaaS. Just like how. Yeah, SaaS. Exactly. And so what you could do is, Tracy, you could fill in one form and immediately you could get the voter file. You could get your website built by just filling in one form. You could get an online fundraising page. And within a 4 or 5 minutes, you would actually have a complete web presence.
So almost the way NGP Van has kind of taken over.
Yeah.
The world now. I'm sure we'll get there in a few.
And they were my competitors, they did not like me. And I have never said this to anyone on any show, but they made an offer to acquire us, but they only wanted us for the Democrats, right? Because we had very high sophisticated technology, probably more than them at that time. I think they've surpassed us, because I have not been doing this for the last 7 years now. And so what ended up happening was I just said, nope, We're gonna do this. We're gonna make it fair for everyone, because look, Tracy, I struggled. I was a turban wearing candidate. I know how difficult it is for candidates to run for office. People don't tell you all the tricks and things that you need to do. And so my goal was to do that. But one of the best things that happened when we partnered up with Microsoft is that we went to 22 other countries. So we actually deployed this technology after the Tahrir Square revolution in Egypt. We did this for Juan Manuel Santos, president of Colombia. We did this for Donald Tusk, the president of the European Union. We provide this for civil rights leader Anwar Ibrahim in Malaysia. We provide this for the PAN party, the conservative right in Mexico. We provide this for Jose Serra, the conservative right in Brazil. We provide this helping Enda Kenny get elected as the first Taoiseach or prime minister of Ireland for the Fine Gael party.
Wow.
Since, you know, and winning a landslide victory, winning over almost 75 plus seats.
So how bear with me. I kind of get into the weeds a little bit. How did this? So let's say you helped these folks get elected by utilizing the power of information through your technology that you developed.
Correct. And what the methodology that I developed was creating and training them on the technology, right? I wouldn't run their campaigns. What I would do was show them how to drive this like awesome Formula One race car, right? Because it was too comprehensive. And a lot of these campaigns would bring me in most likely in the last 30 or 60 days where it became very difficult. But we were able to turn things around. Like in Juan Manuel Santos's campaign in Colombia, he was defense minister and he was losing by about almost 24, 25 points. And we were able, Tracy, to turn around that where he had a decisive victory.
Wow.
So, and that was important because back then, believe it or not, Chavez was alive in Venezuela and he was actually sending tweets from Caracas to influence the election in Colombia.
Wow. Wow.
Now, we're talking about 2010. So these tactics that we're hearing about Trump that happening, et cetera, are not new to the political, you know, world. We know of these tactics. Cambridge Analytics appending data. Every consultant who did social media appended data.
It's the Cambridge stuff ended up being, oh gosh, what a mess. They acted as though this was some crime. It happens all the time. It's not.
And the enablers, Tracy, are the big tech companies. They make it available. Right. So, I mean, it's basically I'll explain to your audience. It's in three simple steps. You have a voter file, you have a social media file, and then you have third party data, and you append all of that.
So all they're doing is basically taking someone's social media presence and tying it to their voter record.
Amen. So, Tracy, look at this. You take your Twitter handle, right, which is awesome. And automatically, I have to throw a plug in there for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You take that Twitter handle. I can run that in there and automatically find your name, your phone number, your email address, and any other public accessible data up to 450 fields of data from the consumer file.
Very powerful.
So this is no magic stuff. They made it into this big story and everything like that. And I'm just going to myself, what's going on here, right? So in 2014, I'm running the campaign, running these multiple campaigns. And I will say this now, you know, probably was getting really confident and a little cocky because reputation was going up, company was going up. And then all of a sudden, I'm sitting in Turkey and we're doing the campaign against this dictator, right? Against the AK Party, right? Who's currently in power still, you know? And we see the changes that are happening there. And I get the contract for the CHP, which is the opposition party. And
how do you work out with that?
Well, this was dangerous because at the same time, you know, every time we got a contract in any of these countries, we would notify the State Department. We would notify, you know, and let them know that our technology is being utilized. Microsoft, of course, would let them utilize it. And everyone did not want, you know, this gentleman, or I would say not gentleman, but dictator now, get elected again and again in Turkey. And it was my first campaign out there. And all of a sudden I get a phone call. Okay, and this is the same timing. This is in 2013. And I'm getting a series of phone calls where they're asking me to come back to San Diego, California. And I'm going, why do I need to come back to San Diego? Well, you know, you helped that Mexican presidential campaign. That same donor wants you to work on another political PAC and this and that. And I'm going, well, you know, I'm fine, but I'm really swamped right now and my staff can handle it. And we had over, you know, 40 plus people working for us and they insisted. So I said, okay, I'll take a direct flight. I'll come back. I'll be back in 2 days. I mean, that's how I rolled. It was crazy. I would just fly from Istanbul, Turkey, all the way into LA airport, and then drive down to San Diego. I get there, and Tracy, it's a sting operation. They had made up this entire campaign out of nowhere to make me say the words that I was willing to help a foreign national.
So this was a supposed campaign being run in San Diego by somebody who was in Mexico that was now running in the United States. Am I understanding that?
Yeah, he was a Japanese American who happened to have a Mexican passport, right? And they used him as the bait, right? Saying, "Oh, you worked for him. Come down and help us on this campaign."
So you had worked for this. You had done. You're not, and again, you said you're not working directly for these campaigns. You're working you're helping to implement the software.
Correct.
So you implement the software for this gentleman in Mexico to run.
Correct.
And then he supposedly moves to the United States and is going to run again in San Diego. Was that legal in and of itself?
No, let me correct you. So the gentleman had lived in San Diego for 27 years or 25 plus years. And he was living in San Diego. And, you know, remember when Japanese were sent to concentration camps in Mexico? So he's descendants of those concentration camps, right? And he was actually a Japanese Mexican. His wife was an American. His son was an American. And he was the person who got me involved in the Mexican presidential election and was interested in franchising my company out in Mexico and Latin America for other political campaigns. And so I knew of this individual. He did not set me up. The FBI called up and said, this gentleman wanted me to come back down. And I had no idea. I didn't double check it, right? And they used that as a lure to get me to come down and to work on a fake campaign that they created.
Okay, so then they're saying that this guy isn't actually running. He's just sponsoring the campaign.
Correct.
Of a fake candidate that you... Do you know who the candidate was at that point, or...?
I had no idea, and because, you know, very simply put, I was, you know, and this was my mistake, I didn't do my proper due diligence, and I come down there, and I come out there, and I tell them very clearly, okay, do you have a pack? You know, going through all this stuff. And they make me use the words foreign national, and I'm saying I never use these terms, right, foreign national, but the law is very clear. If a foreign national gives money to a U.S. political campaign, it's a crime. And I kept on saying, you know, I didn't look at this guy's citizenship
in other words, you didn't do the background work to see if he was a citizen or not. You're just working with somebody who's helping to fund campaigns.
Exactly. And so what happens is I'm going to myself, and this is not uncommon, right? You find a fat cat, you find a donor, you find someone who will automatically, you know, go ahead and make sure that the technology is bought. And I'm going to myself to the campaign. I'm going to them. I'm saying, hey, listen, this is not adding up to me. This is not making sense. And they keep on saying foreign national. I keep on saying, what does foreign national have to do with anything? And what it is that the law is very clear. If you help a foreign national, you're committing a crime. And to me, I was looking at him as a Japanese American. And just so your audience knows, Tracy, there's no way you can Google this. There's no way there's no public database telling what is the status of American citizens back in 2012 when this took place. And so there was no way you could find out in 2012 whether or not I was a green card holder, etc. Now, keep in mind, I look like a foreigner, right?
Yeah, you do.
I have a turban, I have a beard, et cetera. And so what they were doing was shaping a narrative that this, you know, and I, you know, I hate to even say this, but I think the agent, you know, she didn't know I was Sikh American. I think till this day, she thought I was a Muslim American. And she thought, oh my God, I got this Muslim who's helping, you know, an American in America, you know, who's a foreigner, and he's giving money to U.S. elections. Can you imagine?
So this is in, because before, when we were just talking, I'm just getting timeline straight for everybody.
Yeah.
You had said 2013, but this is actually 2012?
Yeah, so the election was in 2012 that I helped the campaign in.
Okay.
And they had called me back up for the setup in 2014.
Got it.
So We find out that they had been monitoring me from 2013 to 2014.
And this was the only, in quote, infraction that they could find, and it was a plant the whole time.
100%. I've never been arrested. I don't have a parking ticket. I've been a military cadet. I love my country. Everything, right? 100%, right? I'm tied up with Microsoft, right? I notify the State Department, which I don't have to do, before we even do political campaigns, right? I mean, totally above the board. I have some of the top law firms representing me just to make sure all our contracts and everything is done correctly.
So the words foreign national end up changing your entire life
completely.
What happened?
I immediately get thrown into a federal prison for 4 days, and I am told that I'm evil by the agent. I'm told that I'm a bad guy. I'm told that basically I intentionally did this, and I start getting really bombarded. I'm in shock.
When the agent says did this just means helping to implement software so someone can run their campaign.
No, they were trying to dig around. They wanted to know about every other foreign campaign that I worked on. They wanted to know on which other congressmen, Republicans specifically, candidates that I helped on. And I want to tell your audience, Tracy, something that's interesting. In 2012, unknowingly, I worked on President Donald Trump's first presidential website.
Oh, wow.
And I did his political fundraising campaign.
And how do you say unknowingly?
Because when I was doing my dissertation, I was doing my research on Donald Trump, his political consultant used us as the back end vendor. And I had no idea until when I was searching and looking at the Wayback Machine, which is a public database where you can see websites. When I went through the Wayback Machine, I noticed that it was our technology.
That's so crazy. So now you're in jail, in federal prison, actually, arrested for helping a foreign national illegally in the United States of America. And then what?
And then I'm going, how did I get here? You know, what did I do? I'm thinking, did one of my employees make a mistake? Did we break protocol? You know, what we do? I'm going through all these things in my head, and I fall into I hate to admit it to your audience, but it's the truth. I fell into a little depression because what I had built 14 years of my life was taken in 14 days. The companies got shut down. I couldn't make payroll. They seized all my computers. They had a SWAT team sent to my office in Washington, D.C. They raided my offices. I gave them all my passwords. I gave everything. I cooperated 100% because I was convinced 100% there was nothing that I did incorrectly.
So this is a long time ago.
Yeah, it's still hard to say this because it's you know, I'm suffering from some PTSD from it, but it's just very traumatic because just like anyone who starts a company in America, you're worried about the team, you're worried about the campaigns. We had actively over 1,700 political campaigns, and I will tell your audience that we counted 834 of those campaigns were Republican in 2014, and in one shot during the Barack Obama administration, all those websites went down.
Wow.
And they were all forced to get new technology, a new vendor. And I tried calling up my competitors. I helped them do the transition. I mean, I'll give you an example. The Utah Republican Party was our client. So can you imagine? We were in charge of the Utah Republican primary. And it was our software that was running it. And that all got shut down because of this case.
Wow. So obviously there's, knowing the Obama administration and how they targeted conservatives, you can deduce there's a chance that this was a politically motivated thing, especially.
Not only think, Tracy, it haunts me every day because, you know, I'm a turban wearing, I'm a Republican, and I'm thinking, how could an African-American president have it against me? But then again, you know, it doesn't shock me because at the same time, I see what is happening to conservatives all around the world, and specifically in the United States. We saw what happened during the Tea Party. My mother and my father have seen what has happened to General Flynn and what's gone on, and it has brought tears to our eyes. Because
General Flynn was a Democrat.
Yeah, that's right. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
It hits at the heart because our party affiliation has become sort of a label, right, or an ism that is defining us, right? And there's a discrimination that happens, and it continues to go on. So mom and dad said, look, we fight this, right? We took this to court. We go to trial, right? In 2016, from 25 charges, you can Google this, you can look it up. But, you know, they basically had a sealed indictment against me. I didn't know what the exact charges were till almost 6 months later. My computers are seized. Some of them are erased. I'm told I could never talk about that. I'm told to keep my mouth shut, otherwise I'll get more additional charges. I'm told that basically the charges against me and my company at the same time.
And when do you learn exactly? So obviously, are you able to bring some of those attorneys that were working on contracts to help you, or do you need to go out because of conflict of interest? Like, how do you find your defense?
Yeah, that's a great question. Luckily, I whatever resources we had, and I will tell your audience this, we took everything we had, and my brother said something prophetic to me. He said, listen, this is karma. He says, whatever it is, God clearly wants you to face this battle. You have approximately about $2 million that you could use to defend yourself, or you could do the 6 years in prison that they're asking.
See, and this is the quandary that faces everybody. $2 million isn't enough.
And it isn't. We ended up spending, excuse me, because it hurts, because my parents have had to, you know, my parents' house is still under the bond after 7 years. And we spent over $2.6 million. I haven't told anyone that. That's how much we spent.
How come it takes so long? So you're in federal court now going back and forth and back and forth. You went from 25 charges down to how many?
Seven.
And what were they?
They came down to conspiracy, forgery, bribery. It was unbelievable charges.
What was their basis for the forgery charge?
Oh, the forgery was the most interesting. I'm going to explain this to your audience, but this is a fundamental thing that happens in the industry, but everyone doesn't know about it. Tracy, when you run for political office, or if you, like, suppose, let's say hypothetically you run for office, right? You run for Congress. You run for Congress, you set up a committee. That committee, because you're running for Congress, is governed by what we call the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission. Mm-hmm. They set the rules. They tell you how much money you can raise, when you're supposed to report. Now, it is your obligation to form a committee, get a treasurer, get a campaign manager, and they basically do the filings to the FEC. They say, okay, yes, Tracy spent $100 on popcorn. She spent, you know, $5,000 on yard signs. That's what they do. The government here used federal law to prosecute me for two local state campaigns.
That didn't file?
Yes, about my participation.
How is that possible?
Exactly.
So they're basically blaming you, the software proprietor, for them not filing their FEC. How is that forgery?
Exactly, because they said that I intimidated, my turban was an intimidation factor. I convinced them, and all these Democratic consultants that were working on these campaigns basically all took plea deals. And they basically said, yes, Ravi, you know, was convinced us that we shouldn't file.
Can you imagine? Wait. These were Democrat campaigns that were also under scrutiny as well, and they passed the buck and blamed you?
100%.
Oh, this is confusing, Rob. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know it's confusing, but I trust me, before this call, I tried to write it down on index cards, and even I get confused sometimes because it's been 7 years, Tracy, of my life, and I don't know if you can hear the pain in my voice. Your show is the first show where I'm able to tell the full story, and you're the first person who is kind enough to give me the whole hour to explain what happens, because I don't think anyone would even believe that this would happen in America.
No, when I met you, I was like, oh my gosh, you're just the most amazing guy. Like, you're great. You're brilliant too. Like, we're going to get into some of that too. But so you got forgery for, see, I don't even understand how they throw the, what were they claiming you forged?
So they said that I was forcing the campaigns to not file.
That's insanity. Okay, what else was it? It was conspiracy, forgery, what else?
The bribery charge got turned down because they said basically I was trying to buy intelligence, and they threw that out right away because that had no merits whatsoever. But they accused me of basically trying to bribe a government official. Can you imagine? I mean, they had nothing. They had zero, and they threw it out the week before the trial. Can you imagine?
So then they ended up with the seven. Which seven stuck?
So the seven that stuck were basically built around conspiracy. The fact that I need to know the guy was a foreign national, and then basically it was the forgery. Those were the three buckets.
Okay. Then you eventually go to trial because you're fighting this and you're not saying, yes, let me take this plea deal.
No. In fact, that's where my brother's karma thing kicked in. I said to myself, God has given me the resources to fight this. I'm an American patriot. I love my country. If I don't do this, someone else is going to go down through this rabbit hole with me, you know, or again. And I said, I have to do this. And my parents said, listen, we'll support you and be your family, but you have to realize, you know, and all my political friends said, this is going to take years. And I said, I don't care. It took 2 years to get the trial. The government was shocked. We went to trial in 2016, Tracy, and I was convicted on four of the seven charges.
Which ones?
It was focused on conspiracy, and it was focused on the forgery aspect, those two buckets.
And you had a trial in California.
San Diego, California. And when the trial took place, what was interesting was that they did not instruct the jury that I need to know that the gentleman who was giving the money to these political campaigns had to be a foreign national. I had to know that. They did not instruct it. They intentionally threw that out.
So they didn't instruct the jury that in order to convict you on that charge, you had to know that guy was a foreign national and that your ignorance of that was innocence. So they didn't instruct the jury of that. They just said, if he did this, he's guilty.
And my lawyers made great arguments. They said, listen, if Robbie really was this smart and he wanted to bypass laws, he would have just taken the check from his wife or from his son, and he would have been compliant.
Yeah. You see that happen all the time.
They said, oh, no, he's too stupid. You know, and then all of a sudden I said, look, I'm a software vendor. You know, our company does this all the time. We have thousands of campaigns.
What happened to Microsoft in all this?
They broke the contract and they walked away.
And nobody came after Microsoft for these same crimes.
No.
So you get convicted and do you appeal?
Of course, we appeal. And I want everyone to know, when you fight, right, miracles happen. I'm going to say this again. When you fight and you do what the principles of this country happen, I know everyone right now is saying, how is Trump going to win? Because we need a miracle. But I'm going to say, when you fight the truth, when the president right now is fighting for the truth, miracles do happen. And in my case, that's exactly what happened. The Ninth Court of Appeal, right, in California said, whoa, something's not right. They suspended the sentence. They didn't send me to Pensacola Federal Prison. And they said, well, hear the case.
Wow. And what happened then?
They basically overturned the forgery charge, the one that you were just talking about.
Ah, so what, they left you with conspiracy then?
That's correct. But they didn't go as far to turn out the other one because the other campaign basically alluded that I was a volunteer in their campaign. Can you imagine a CEO of the technology company? I was a volunteer.
So they're saying, let's break down a little bit for folks out there so they understand, because I am blessed to tell you right now that my listeners and the people that listen to this show are brilliant people who get it.
Yeah. Yes.
What was this conspiracy charge? Break it down for me. How is it conspiracy?
So a lot of people know what conspiracy is. It means that you don't commit a crime, but you are going to commit a crime, right? It's basically they alluded the fact that you walked down a series of hops that were going to eventually commit a crime, right? And the conspiracy that they charged me was to aid and help a foreign national, right, to give money to the U.S. elections.
So basically what they're saying is because you flew to San Diego, because you had worked with him in the past, because you supposedly, you didn't know, and they weren't alleging that you knew either. Otherwise, they wouldn't have instructed the jury not to.
Exactly.
So they knew you didn't know he was a, quote, foreign national either.
Exactly.
So basically, they're just using these series of hops that you took at the behest of a customer.
Correct.
And the appeals court didn't... What was the shortcoming, in your opinion, that caused the appeals court not to overturn it all?
Well, if you watch the video from the appellate court, which is on my website on ravisingh.com, you will see that the government openly admits that they made a mistake on instructing the jury. And yet the Ninth Court still goes in favor of the government.
Wow. And could you go higher?
Well, that's what we did. We went all the way to the Supreme Court. We filed and we actually got a writ, but we could not be heard. And we didn't get on the docket, so the case at the United States Supreme Court got tossed back down to the district court just this year.
And you just recently went through sentencing.
That's correct. So the hearing was scheduled for, I think it was like February, then it was April, and then with COVID, it was scheduled for July, finally it was scheduled for September, then it was scheduled the day after the election. And then that week I show up and basically, you know, they were saying, you know, before 3 to 5 years, this, all the stuff, the judge had said, we're going to give you 15 months. I had about 70 letters of character. I told him I completed my PhD during this period of time. I would finish my master's degree during this time in social media. In 3 years, I finished not only the PhD, the master's, the Harvard program in digital marketing, the Duke program in digital marketing, and the MIT Sloan technology program in their business school. And I wrote a dissertation of about 450 pages on Donald Trump. I gave community service for over 1,000 hours. And I also was on pretrial services for 2,000 days. I had not left the country. They had taken my passport. I had not voted as per their instruction. And I sought permission to go beyond 30 miles.
So you did everything you were supposed to do, plus showed that you were an upstanding citizen who obviously is not some freaking hardened criminal. And then what did the judge do?
The judge said, no, you're going. And I said, but Your Honor, I said, you know, COVID now, and I understand, et cetera, they're releasing prisoners because of nonviolent crimes. And he says, no. And then we left, and you won't believe it. 2 weeks later, we get a phone call, and they said, oh, we made an error. I'm like, what? And any lawyer out there will be shocked because they'll think that they're hearing me incorrectly. This has never happened in the United States America system or judicial system where you are sentenced and then called back to be resentenced.
What was the mistake they said they made?
They said they made a procedural error.
And so you had to go all the way back to California.
Traumatizing my parents, my wife, everyone else. And as of exactly, you know, not even one week ago, 6 days ago, I was in San Diego. And on this time I told the judge, and I really spoke from the heart. I said, Judge, I hope that you're not sentencing me to prison because I did Donald Trump's website. I hope it's not because I'm a Republican. I hope it's not because I helped all these campaigns. I hope it wasn't to shut me down. I said, please, at least give me home confinement with my wife and my parents who I take care of. And they said, no, you're going to federal prison for 1 year and a day.
So you have to now go to federal prison for a year and a day for this ridiculousness. How many Democrat campaigns did you guys handle?
We probably handled about 40% of our business was Democrats and 60% were Republicans.
And of those campaigns, do you know how many won?
Oh, probably. I would say that, you know, this is just a guess, but I would say, you know, we were always helping the underdog. So we were probably not even 50-50 all the time.
Okay. But it was so when you gather all this information, just from my own knowledge, where does it go? Does the company maintain it? Is it buyable? Can someone...
Someone can buy my assets that I have from all this stuff. But here's the thing. Look, all of this data was taken. Some of it was scrubbed. Some of it, all the computers were not given back. The technology is still there. And trust me, it pains me to see what is happening in the Republican Party, because our software could generate and solve a lot of these challenges that were going on in the last two election cycles that I have not been able to participate. And trust me, I firmly believe, Tracy, and you know, I think I know for a fact that taking me out of the game, which is one of the probation sentences, I can no longer participate. This is one of the criteria of my sentencing. I can no longer participate in federal, state, or local campaigns of any kind, social media, non-tech, or any participation for another 4 years.
So even after you get out, for 3 years after that, you're not allowed to do anything political on social media or elsewhere.
I'm a threat. That's what they told me.
This is crazy.
And just do the math, Tracy. 4 years from December, right, of 2020 is what?
It's the 2024 presidential campaign.
I'm out.
And then what about, so you did a lot of other stuff while this was all going on. Can you explain to folks what you were able to do? And if you can't talk about it, that's fine, with Twitter.
Sure. Well, Tracy, when I met you and at the AMP conference, I told you the story of my mother. My mother, after the trial, slapped me across the face.
I got to meet this woman.
You know, and she told me, that's it. You are going to show these guys that my son is not a terrorist, is not a cyber hacker, that you're an American and that you love this country. And we come here, we pay our taxes, we'll do anything for this country. And you're going to show them and get so educated that I want the government to eventually hire you
to work for them.
Exactly. And so my mom said, you're going to go get the credentials. And I said, Mom, there's no PhD in social media. You know, I'm just being a son, sarcastic. I'm like, Mom, there's no PhD. And she goes, you will find one and you will attend it.
And you did.
And that's what I did. And I got my PhD in 15 months and I got my dissertation approved in another 15 months. And I graduated the complete program in 35 months, which anyone knows a PhD usually takes anywhere from 6 to 9 years.
That's insane. And so what is your PhD in specifically? Because this is the part that really intrigues me.
I wanted to know, Tracy, what I was doing right in all these campaigns, right? I was just doing this sort of by osmosis, right? Because I love politics. I ran for office, et cetera. I wanted to understand the scientific experts. And some of the best experts are at MIT, right? Dr. Sanan Aral is one of the worldwide experts on this stuff, the cover of Science Magazine. He actually added his name to my dissertation. Can you imagine? He basically said, Ravi, if you can prove mathematically, not qualitatively, but mathematically, quantitatively, that what you're saying is correct about Donald Trump, I will put my name to it.
And I did it,
Tracy. And as God is my witness, it was one of the best miracles of my life and one of the best things that happened to me, because I worked so hard, Tracy. I didn't, not only that, I attended the MIT classes. I was not a good math student. I took statistics. I took 300 hours of tutoring in statistics. And you know what? I ran a data analysis on all of Donald Trump's tweets for the last 9 years.
And what'd you find?
I found out that this narrative that the media is saying, that he's crazy and angry and et cetera, he's not. He's joyful. And that he is actually creating engagement by his tweets. I think that unknowingly, knowingly, et cetera, he is a mastermind. And now everyone's saying that on Twitter. And I think they started seeing this. That's why they started flagging him, tagging him, banning him, and coming up with new policies, 6 major new policies in the last 2 years that Twitter has never done. Twitter has done a total of 15 major policy changes, and 6 of them happened in the last 2 years.
Just because President Trump is so effective at messaging.
I believe that Trump's presence on Twitter was a threat, not only to the election process, because it provided him such a powerful, what I call, social media voice. When you develop a social media voice as strong as the president of the United States, Donald Trump had mastered engagement and he bypassed traditional media.
Yep.
And his message amplified. And what it wasn't just the message, Tracy. What it was it allowed the everyday person to engage back with the world leader. And that is power. And that's empowering to those people. Because when I know that the president is liking me or reading my tweet, or I can add a comment to his things and I can see other followers do it, guess what happens? I am mobilized. I am amped up to go ahead and give participation. And they wanted to suppress this.
Well, not only that, it's not even like it was canned. It was genuine. And I think that that's the thing that people don't understand. You can't duplicate that. You can't get a Senator Loeffler or Perdue or, you know, anyone to duplicate genuine interaction like that with people. You can't do it.
That's 100%. And because he was genuine, authentic, I call this his voice, right? His social media voice. He did not do what Hillary Clinton did, which would hire a bunch of experts to write tweets for her,
yep.
You know, or just like Biden just did. He was not using his own voice. And Donald Trump used his own voice to actually create engagement. And here's the saddest part. These rules and these changes that Twitter has done by flagging, banning, and suppressing will never allow another person like Donald Trump to ever rise to power again.
Which is why there's this push to get off of Twitter and all this other stuff. But people don't understand. It's just not that easy.
Exactly. And I would encourage people not to get off, because I'll tell you why. As a professor of social media, it is only if we participate. When the New York Post article came out about Joe Biden, it was the people's voice, your voice, everyone else's voice, that forced Twitter in within 24 hours to change their policy.
I know. It's such a double-edged sword for folks.
And that's what people don't understand. So I don't believe in this dystopia of the internet. I believe in a utopia. And I do believe firmly that we can use these platforms and, you know, automatically change it. And trust me, Jack Dorsey and all these other founders might have the best intention in their bubble. But the reality is we are built on a nation where our voice has power. And that's why Donald Trump continuously tweeting about this election and the fraud and et cetera, that's his power as president. There's no law against that. The freedom of speech is embedded in those tweets.
One of my favorite quotes is by Margaret Mead. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has.
Amen. Amen. And here's one interesting statistic I want to share with your readers that just came out, or your listeners, sorry, last week. 29% of all flagged tweets by Twitter got less engagement.
That's it? I would expect it to be more.
So, but Tracy, what that means is that they were able to suppress his voice.
Yeah.
And that means if they were able to suppress his vote, let's hop one more. They were able to suppress participation. And let's hop one more. If they suppress participation, people didn't come out and vote.
They started flagging these tweets after the election, the voter fraud tweets. And even before, actually, because they were flagging his tweets about the fact that there would be voter fraud.
Right.
They started this like a week and a half, 2 weeks before the election, maybe a little more, because my days have all merged together. And I'm sure that you're feeling the same way. I don't want to get too far off of you, though, because what do we do now for you? Like, what do we do?
Well, everyone should share your podcast and share this, because this should never happen to another American. I'm hoping that the powers that be, my only shot of not doing time is a clemency from the United States presidency, right, from the U.S. President Donald Trump. And even then, I have to still serve one day. But that is my only Hail Mary out there. And mom and dad, and for my wife, I'm hoping that the Department of Bureau of Prison actually has said, and the Department of Justice has said, that nonviolent crimes could be potentially applicable for home confinement.
I don't understand why they would have to have you in a cell.
I don't know either, Tracy. And trust me, that's what, you know, keeps us up late at night, you know. And when my wife cries at night, and my mother and my father, who have been law-abiding citizens in this country, and we have 700,000 Sikh Americans, are asking ourselves, how can this happen? You know, I mean, you have to ask yourself, there has to be something more to this. This doesn't seem right.
So you have a website where everybody can go and read all of this. It's all very much documented there. What is the website for everybody?
My personal website is ravisingh.com. That's ravisingh.com or campaignguru.com.
I don't even know. I mean, I could start a petition. I could start a tweet. There should be no reason why this isn't looked at by President Trump to see what he can do. I mean, is it really that big of a deal to have somebody, you know what I mean? It's not like you did anything wrong.
Right. I mean, it would have been a clerical error under California law, right? And it's a federalism issue. It hurts so hard, Tracy. But I'll tell you one thing at the end of the day. I think there's a purpose to all of this, sharing this now that we know what has happened. I think, you know, it is important that we all continue to raise our voice online and social media. We should share this. That's my only request, because I'm all out of legal options. There's nothing else I can do. You know, on January 11th, I will be sentenced. The only Hail Mary I have right now that my parents are praying for is that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, you know, actually can pass, you know, and not give me a pardon, but clemency, which means that, you know, just says that, you know, I can stay at home.
Ugh. Well, we'll do our best for you. This story is crazy. Again, go to the website, ravisingh.com or campaignguru.com. You have a redirect, I guess.
And, yes, correct.
And check out the story. You're a brilliant guy, a wonderful person. I was really blessed to meet you, and I hope we can do something for you before that day comes.
No, Tracy, you keep it up. You're one of the, you know, you're one of the Republican conservative angels out there that continue to really do the right thing. And we're all grateful for you. So thank you.
Thank you. So what do you think of that, Frank?
Wow, that was riveting. I can't wait. I can't wait to listen to it at 2:30.
We just can't do it. We cannot mislead our audience, no matter how hard we try.
No, I mean, we've been trying to mislead the audience since the beginning, but it just doesn't work out.
Damn it, we can't lie.
Oh, man, I know.
So it was a really good interview. I think the listeners will agree. And Frank, you'll have some time later to listen to it. And it's really, indeed, really good. There's a lot going on. I am hoping, Frank, this week at some point to have a long-awaited guest on the Dark to Light podcast.
When you say long-awaited, are we talking like of the Flynn variety?
Because potentially.
Because, you know, I'm like licking my chops around here. I'm like, how in the hell has Michael Flynn granted like 8 different interviews and Tracy has not grabbed them yet?
There's a reason for everything.
Oh, I know. I know. But patience is not something that is a strong suit of mine.
So guys, I'm hoping. Don't count. Don't. Things change. And I'm not sure yet. So don't count on it yet. But when it happens, it will be a doozy. Yes, it will.
I'm gonna have to get my top 3 questions together.
You need to you should have them already. What is wrong with you?
You know what it is? I actually had questions. I remember sending you questions maybe like 2.5 years ago, saying these are some of the questions I want to ask Michael Flynn the day that all this is behind him and he's able to start doing press and all that stuff. I remember sending some of my just like my wish list questions. But over the course of 2.5 years, you get a lot of those answers.
Yeah, you do. And things change. Yeah. I started listening to his interview with Dan Bongino today. And I ended up having to stop because I got a phone call. But it was...
The one from last week?
Yeah. He's just a great interview. You don't even have to talk.
Right.
Did you ever hear a General Flynn interview?
Oh, yeah. I've listened to several over the last couple of days.
Not ours. Like I said, but they're not ours.
Just not ours.
Everybody will understand why when the interview happens.
Well, hey, you know, I know this is off topic, but there's a couple of things. I don't know where the hell it came from, but you see that video of a person that's supposed to be Joe Biden limping his way through a cemetery?
Was that supposed to be Joe Biden with no ankle boot on?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell it was. But it looks weird. And then there's another video I'm going to be playing on my show tonight. Some mysterious guy made an appearance on TikTok, and now it's being...
Oh, yeah, with the curly hair?
Yeah. I mean, his gaze alone kind of freaks me out.
Yeah, he is a little creepy, isn't he? I saw that this morning. It's this guy on TikTok. You want to play it? I have it.
It's 56 seconds long over here. I was going to bring up all of the theories that people had because it's been, you know.
Well, we have a few minutes if you want to do it.
I just sent it to you.
Oh, I got it.
On the Skype.
Hold on. Let's see here.
Everybody's like, who is this guy? Any guesses? I mean, he wants to be... Who the hell knows? It could just be one big LARP, but still, it's intriguing because
you
there's
play
so much
it?
Going on.
Let's play it.
Yeah, play it.
You want the whole truth. You deserve the whole truth. So here's the thing. Find out who I am. For those of you who know, you're not saying anything. Well, those golden tickets you have are really lined with lead. Because until the whole truth comes out, it's all just lies on both sides. So anyway, TikTok, have some fun with this. Find out who that man is with the silly curl on his forehead. I forgot I even had that curl for decades. Strangest thing, having your memories wiped out. Well, anyway, take care, TikTok. Godspeed.
It's very weird.
It is very weird. And of course, people are, you know, the first thing I started seeing is it Christopher Reeves? Is it JFK Jr.? Whatever. It's obviously not them, but it's just one of those things where it intrigues me because it's in the same vein as the
Kevin Spacey.
Yes.
Yeah.
It seems like a shot, a Kevin Spacey kind of a message that's a shot across the bow of the elite. I mean, Spacey, you say, well, whatever happened with that? I don't know. Kevin Spacey's still walking around. He pretty much told the world in front of his fireplace with his coffee cup, with his mug on, with his apron on. What was the coffee cup had like the royal, the queen's seal on it or something like that?
It was really.
And you pretty much told the world, if I go down, I'm taking you with me.
And then what happened? Everybody around him died. All the victims.
Four witnesses are dead so far.
Wow.
And two of them were hit by cars.
Yeah, I know. It's very weird. It really is. Oh,
so I don't know. It's just part of the whole experience we got going on over here.
For sure. This is definitely a weird one. I got sent it this morning. And I figured out what was wrong with my belly.
What?
It was the zinc I was taking. I got new zinc because my zinc was burned down.
Where'd you get it from? Because I just ordered raw zinc from Garden of Life over the weekend.
Well, when you take raw zinc, I'm going to warn you right now. Be prepared for your belly to hurt like hell.
Really?
Yes, because I accidentally got the raw zinc. The one that I was taking originally was zinc glycinate. This one was just zinc. And
I found a zinc and vitamin C.
Oh. Yeah, well,
although
mine had like pumpkin seed oil and like the first one that I was taking that was really well tolerated. And I was taking it twice a day, 30 milligrams each time. This one, my idiot self ordered, was 50 milligrams of pure zinc that I was taking twice a day. Too much zinc. And I was miserable for days.
Just figured it out by just stopping it altogether, I guess.
I just stopped the zinc completely, and I've been absolutely fine. Now, I don't like, you know, I've been taking that prophylactic kind of like combination of quercetin and zinc for like almost 3 months. So it's not really good to take that much zinc every day for 3 months because you can have too much zinc.
Well, this one is only 30 milligrams. You said you had 50?
I had 30 milligram capsules that I was taking twice a day. So it was 60 milligrams a day. And I moved to 50 milligrams twice a day by accident.
Jeez. Okay. Well, maybe I just won't do that.
No, don't do that.
And maybe I'll be okay.
Yeah, because there is zinc toxicity. Like, you can hurt yourself with too much zinc.
You know, the other thing, I don't know. There's just so much weird. I know we only have 10 minutes. And we have to wrap it up. And we'll do more on Wednesday. But even little thing like Air Force. You saw the Axios thing about the Air Force One?
No.
Axios, which of course, you know, when we're talking about 2016 and the Russia scandal and the dossier, Yahoo and Michael Isikoff's of the world, they were the ones that were tapped on the shoulder to step up to the plate and help substantiate and legitimize all this bullshit information that was being used to launch this operation. Axios is definitely has risen to the top of the pecking order in 2020. They were there for to float the Red Mirage transition integrity project stuff in the middle of the summer. They were there the week before the election to talk about what Joe Biden's strategy was going to be after election night, which was pretty much act as if they said that the Associated Press or somebody was going to project him as a winner and he was going to immediately start working on his transition and not pay attention to anybody that's going to call attention to any of the, you know, anything. So Axios has been the big thing there, the big purveyor of shit in 2020. But this one over here, Trump is considering a made-for-TV grand finale, an Air Force One flight to Florida for a political rally opposite of Joe Biden's inauguration, which I haven't gotten too deep into it yet because the first question I have to myself is, if Joe Biden is inaugurated on January 20th or 21st, as of 12:01 p.m., Air Force One is not Donald Trump's to fly anywhere.
Right. Yeah, these idiots. You're so smart.
So what are they? I mean, I have to read it a little bit more, but this is what's being kicked around, that Trump is planning a rally opposite of Joe Biden's inauguration. Because, of course, Axios is part of the act as if coalition.
That's so ridiculous. Listen. Oh, did you see what happened yesterday? It was such an honor. I got retweeted by Mr. President again.
Did you?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, which tweet?
He retweeted I tweeted out an Epoch Times article about the chain of custody issues in Georgia. And he retweeted it with a quote. He said, I'll tell you what he said. He quote tweeted me. The president of the United States quote tweeted me, which is pretty cool because last time he didn't. He just retweeted it. He said, come on, he's got Mark Levin all up in here. Scott Adams again. Come on, Tracy. Where is it? Catherine Herridge. Sorry. It was last night. It was just last night. Let me see. I have it in a photo. We'll do it that way. Here it is. This is bad. Gee, what a surprise, he says. Has anyone informed the so-called, parentheses, says he has no power to do anything, end parentheses, Governor Brian Kemp and his puppet Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan that could easily solve this mess and win signature verification and call a special session. So easy. And he also tweeted iPod's tweet, but it was one that I retweeted. So it's almost like the president was on my Twitter feed.
Yeah, imagine that.
That's crazy.
Kicking around.
Kicking around on my Twitter feed.
Kicking around. Oh, you know, this Axios article is actually really stupid.
Really? Actually?
It's actually really stupid. It's, and even at the end, what they're saying, the Trump campaign declined to comment on his plans. White House spokesman Judd Deere said, quote, anonymous sources who claim to know what the president is or is not considering have no idea. When President Trump has an announcement of his plans, plans for January 20th, he will let you know. So, I mean, they're so stupid to even put this on out there. They said that he immediately announcing he's running for re-election in 2020. That's what they think that he's going to be, 2024. They would set up 4 years of Trump playing Biden's critic in chief. The visual also embody the vast difference in the two leaders' approaches to the pandemic, of course. This is
There's
awful.
There is no country or any other election if we don't fix this mess now.
Oh, yeah. They don't understand. But they are waxing poetic on a less than 1 minute read on Amtrak Joe Biden, who is thinking about ditching all of the typical modes of arriving in Washington, D.C. on an Air Force plane, instead pulling in on the same Amtrak he rode to and from Delaware for 30 years.
Oh,
because he's just like everybody else.
Such a
right?
statesman, you know? Frank, isn't he?
He's just like everybody else.
Coming you know, in on right? the Amtrak.
I rode the Amtrak to my inauguration. Yeah.
Jerk.
50 years.
Should come in on a horse and carriage.
Yeah, he should come in on a horse and carriage or some kind of a floating device. He definitely has enough money with all the millions he made in Asia. He should come in on a jetpack.
To infinity and beyond.
Yeah. All right.
All right, well, we'll come back on Wednesday.
We'll see you then, everybody.
You have been listening to the Dark Delight Podcast with...
Pearl Harbor Dave Hal and...
Beans! You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com until Wednesday.
Later.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.